Welcome to the Servant Leadership Institute podcast, a production of the Servant Leadership Institute in Carlsbad, California. We are an organization where education meets action. Our mission is to inspire and equip the people we influence. My name is Carol Malinsky, and today we're going to be having a conversation with Art Barter, founder and CEO of the Servant Leadership Institute. Art is also owner and CEO of Datron World Communications, a radio communications manufacturing company. Art has been operating his companies with servant leadership practices since 2004. He believes servant leadership was the key that allowed Datron to grow from a $6 million company to a $200 million company in just 6 years. As servant leaders, the employees of Datron World Communications have contributed over $15 million to charitable organizations all over the world. Art, thanks for joining us this morning, and it's great to see you.
Great to be here, Carol. Thank you.
Yeah. Art and I go back a ways. We have been working together for the last, I think it's about 18 years now.
Yep. Since 97, I think, right?
Yeah, since 97. You know, I'd love to have a conversation with you this morning really about your story and how we got started on this great adventure that we've been on since 2004. But before we do that, can we talk a little bit about, you know, this? I see more and more frequently this term servant leader out in the world now. Can you tell us and our audience what a servant leader looks like to you?
You know, there's a lot of behaviors that go with being a servant leader. And I think that the mindset that a leader has to have to be a servant is a mindset of thinking of others before themselves. Mm. And they have to put others in the forefront of their mind, of their motives, of their behaviors, of what they do each and every day. And it doesn't mean that you have to be perfect in that world, because we're human beings.
Yeah.
And we all have challenges, but to think of others before yourself is really the underlying driver behind a servant leader. And we can tell people what to do, and we can direct them, we can show them the way, but the real question is, in your actions and in your motives, do those people actually grow through that process? Or are they just doing what you tell them to do?
Yeah.
And so it really gets down to the motives and the heart of someone who wants to help other people.
Yeah. And I know many people are aware that the servant leadership movement, and in business anyway, really got started with Robert Greenleaf. And Robert Greenleaf wrote that he felt serving came naturally, that it was the natural feeling that one wants to serve. And do you really think it comes naturally to people?
In today's environment, I don't think that's a true statement. I think in today's environment, where people have been taught and they focus on themselves, I don't think it's a natural feeling. But I think it's a feeling that we can teach people. And teach is probably the wrong word. I think what we do is we help people let that feeling out. I think it's been buried in today's environment. And we're just opening the door to let it out. But we need to teach them how to do that and take that into their behaviors, take them into their mindset. And so it's a big challenge in today's environment.
Yeah.
Now, Robert started that back in the 60s and 70s. And I remember what I was going through back in that time frame, graduating from high school and going to college and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And, you know, I had no natural feeling that I wanted to go serve people.
Yeah.
And my service, it was all around me in my home. I grew up with great parents. My dad was always involved in service organizations, Rotary, Kiwanis, on the board of the church, involved in the community, and he was always wanting to go help people. And I remember being dragged with him on a Saturday going, come on, we're going down to, you know, see Joe down here because he needs some help. And I also got to see my mother, who was great at hospitality. She would open up her home to anybody.
Yeah.
And she really focused in on making sure that the family understood that getting together to celebrate those birthdays and celebrate Thanksgiving and be together on Christmas and Easter and the other holidays that we celebrate was really, really important. And she created a home that made us want to come home for those times. And so I had parents who served other people all the time. When I was growing up, I didn't recognize that because I wanted to get out of the house.
Sure, of course.
I wanted to go.
Yeah.
I didn't understand what they were doing. And it took me a long time. And when we sat down and started writing the first book is when I reflected to think about what environment I was raised in. And it became very clear it was a special environment. But I didn't know what was going on at the time. And I think that's what's happening today. I think we're so involved in our careers and so involved in where we want to go. And the younger generation's got to go to college, got to go figure out the job that they're going to be good at. Yes. That we need to help them find their gifts. And when we help them find their gifts is when we open up the door to let that feeling of helping other people come out. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what our biggest challenge is today, is letting that feeling out. And we can teach that, and we can help people do that.
Yeah. Boy, it has been a journey that you've been on. And I know just from knowing you personally that some of this journey got started with your spiritual side. And while servant leadership is not a religious thing per se, I know for you it did have a spiritual element to it. Let's talk about that a little bit. Can you tell me that part of your story?
Well, I have to thank my good friend Ken Blanchard for that. He was invited to come to our church as part of a spring series that we were holding, and we're bringing in outside guests. I'd never met Ken until that night. And what I remember about that night when I first met him, a group of men met him at the back door, and of course we offered to pray him up before he went on stage. And one of the guys in the group asked Ken if he had any books to sell. And Ken kind of looked at him kind of funny, and he said, "What do you mean books?" And he says, "Well, a lot of our speakers come to sell books."
Yeah.
And Ken, dead serious, looked at everybody and said, "I'm not here to sell books. I'm here to teach."
Wow.
And what he was saying, he was here to serve.
Wow, that's very unusual.
And his talk that night was titled, "Lead Like Jesus." And he didn't leave it at that. He said, "It's a mandate." And he challenged us in our faith that night that if we really believe what we believe, we really have no choice than to be a servant leader. So that night with Ken, he was talking, and one of the first exercises he asked us to do was break out and talk about leadership. And after we had about 1,000 people that night, and so it was a good crowd. And we all broke out and talked about leadership, and we came back, and he said, "So tell me what you talked about." And everybody yelled out the standard ideas of what leadership was all about.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "How many of the groups talked about Jesus?" And there were about 10 hands that went up in the room. And mine wasn't one of them. So I'm now getting a big-time challenge on what I believe.
Sure.
And Ken was the one that led me to look at my faith and start studying servant leadership and looking at what I really believed in as a leader.
Yeah.
I had to reflect to see what type of leader I was. And that was not a pretty picture. I was the power model persona. I knew how to clear a room pretty fast with saying things, either with words or with the tone in my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the conversation was one way from me to other people. But I had to look at who I was. And Ken's the one that started that through what I believe. And he really asked, "Do you really believe what you believe?" And I said, "I do." He says, "Well, then you don't have an option, Art. You really don't have an option." And here's one of the greatest men I know that teaches leadership and makes a difference in so many lives, taking the time to challenge me and my faith. And I went, "Wow, I've really got to learn about this." Ken became a very good friend and a mentor, and he's helped me through a lot of my changing mindset in becoming a servant leader and what that looks like in an organization. And I'm just very thankful for that. So my journey started in 2003 when Ken came to my church and basically just served and taught. and didn't sell any books. And for that, I'm very grateful.
Yeah. And I know that there's a little more involved in that process because you also went through, you know, we all have life-changing experiences in our lives. And I know you had one that really compelled you to lead in a different way. And it's a great story, but it's also the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to hear about that this morning.
Well, you know, we may need a couple more hours to get through that story. But
we can always do part one and part two.
We'll start at the first. When I worked for a defense contractor here in San Diego, and a company came in to buy that defense contractor, they started due diligence. And the company that I worked for had a division that did most of their business overseas, and that's the division I worked in.
Mm-hmm.
And so 90% of our business we sold to foreign entities, and usually foreign militaries. And so the acquiring company came in and did due diligence and looked at where we did business and how we did that business. And the structure raised red flags with them. And they came to the conclusion that we had to be violating the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, and we call it FCPA. That we were violating the FCPA by bribing foreign officials to get the business that we were doing. And that resulted in an investigation starting with the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. And I have the wonderful thing in my past where I have been a subject in a criminal investigation with the Department of Justice.
Oh, wow.
So that's not something you go around telling people, and you don't want it on your resume.
Right, exactly.
So, but we were basically accused of bribing foreign officials. That led to basically our business being shut down for a while. An investigation started. That investigation included coming in and looking at every transaction we had done for the previous 5-year period. Now, we were a company of about 7 employees at the time.
7 employees?
70.
70.
70 employees. And on one Monday, we had 50 outside attorneys and accountants show up on our doorstep, and they stayed there for about 4 months. Took over our company.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't talk to anyone on the phone overseas without a lawyer present with me in the office. We had to guard our trash, then we had to separate our trash because the government thought we were going to throw out evidence. And it led to 4 months of just unbelievable things that we went through. And at the beginning of it, we decided we're going to stand on the truth. And
right.
We believe the truth is going to set us free. And so we told everyone in the organization that it doesn't matter who talks to you or the questions they ask, you're to tell the truth. And if there's anything we need to know about, we want to know about it.
Right.
And that's how we approached the investigation. Well, at the end of the investigation, one of the accounting partners came to me one night and said, "Art, we didn't find anything." And I said, "Well, I told you 4 months ago you wouldn't, since I've been with the company." And she said, "But I want you to know this is not about Foreign Corrupt Practices Act violation." And I said, "Well, what it's about?" She says, "The acquiring company sees a weakness in the valuation of the company they want to acquire that you work for, and they want a better price for the deal." Now, finding out that this was about getting a better price for the deal and throwing away 70 individuals and their families for a better price on the deal just put an arrow through my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because I watched what my employees were put through in that 4-month period. Now, I wasn't very happy with my employer, because when the investigation got started, I received a call at the beginning of the 4-month period from an attorney from New York who said on Friday night at about 7:30, told me, and I'm in my home in my living room on my phone,
mm-hmm.
with my family,
yeah,
telling me that I'm a subject to in a criminal investigation with the Department of Justice. I lived less than 40 minutes away from the corporate headquarters of the company that I worked for. Not one manager executive valued me enough to get on the phone and call me and tell me this, or get in a car and drive 30 minutes and come face me face to face and say, this is what's going to happen. I received a call from an attorney in New York that I had never met, telling me that my company wanted to advise me that I was a subject in a criminal investigation. Those two events, I promise from that day forward, Ken laid the seed a year before.
Right.
Those two experiences and what I went through that year under the investigation, I committed myself to be a different kind of leader because I didn't want to put anyone through what I went through in that investigation. So Ken planted the seed, and then a couple of experiences that I had that were very painful for me and my family just watered that seed and made it grow. And we came out of it at the end of the year with an opportunity to buy the company, which we did. And those were the events that really solidified my belief in servant leadership and my desire to change the type of leader that I am.
Yeah, that it's, I can only imagine how scary that must have been to get a phone call like that. How did you share that with Lori, your lovely wife?
I have to tell you, Lori, she listened to the whole conversation. I was in the living room on a cell phone, and she listened to the entire conversation. And of course, afterwards we talked. And the thing that I am thankful for and just means so much to me is she didn't pack her bags and leave. She didn't say, you know what, I don't know what you're into, but I don't want any part of it.
Yeah.
She stood by me. She stood behind me. I can't describe what that means. And what was great about it was my kids got to witness that.
Yeah.
My kids got to witness that. And so they witnessed a mom sticking with their family and not turning around and running when times were tough. And I couldn't have done it without her. Could not have done it without her. No.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of us, many of us are blessed to experience those kind of, I think, you know, relationships in our lives. They can be few and far between in today's world, or at least we think they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't help but think that's part of the reason that you and I are, and many others, are so involved in this servant leadership mission, if you will, is because of that sense of family, that sense of community, and wanting to spread those kind of values, you know, into our society in general. You know, it blows my mind that, you know, nobody in your management had the, you know, what's to, you know, call you and let you know that this was going on.
It was a perfect indication of what corporate world is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And there were good men who were in
sure,
that company.
Sure.
And I don't want to take away from the men that were there. But the culture that this country and companies has slipped into, that was the okay thing to do. And that was what was expected of companies, to go into protective mode when things got tough and not to go out and defend. And there were a lot of people in those 70 employees that stood up behind me and said, Art, we're going forward. We're behind you. And we lost one person during that investigation, mm-hmm. one employee who decided to leave us.
Yeah.
And if he's listening to this, he knows who he is because he came back after a while. He came back to Daytron after a while. And he's a very special man too, but we just had a lot of great people behind us, and they believed not only in us, but they believed in what we were doing and where we're going, and they believed in the company. They believed that we could help people in the international markets that we serve in ways that people couldn't even conceive. And for that, I'm very, very grateful.
Yeah. Well, at the time, I have a vivid memory of this because I was there while I wasn't, you know, intimately involved in the whole situation. You said something to me one day that I've carried with me since that time, and that is, I can remember it. We were standing on the manufacturing floor, and you said to me, Carol, we haven't done anything wrong, and I'm not going to say that we did.
Exactly.
Or that we have
right.
done something wrong. And that That just spoke volumes to me and confirmed in my mind that I was in the right place at the right time in my life, and that, you know, the values that I believed in, I could live through the company and the company that you were creating through servant leadership.
Right.
So it's a really good thing that you were able to buy the company.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just cool stuff that happened through that.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna back up for a minute because,
okay,
you know, you and I have been in this together for a long time, but I think people also need to know something about Carol and her faith, because none of this would have happened without a little yellow sticky that I received on a flyer about attending an Easter service down at the pier in Oceanside, California. And on that little yellow sticky, she wrote, "What are you and your family doing this Sunday? Will you join us for Easter services?" Now, you know, I remember seeing that on my chair, and I'm going, "Oh man, we got a religious freak in the company. Oh my gosh, I got to deal with this."
And, oh, that's great.
But we had some challenges. You know, we had a couple of teenagers, and so, you know, life is interesting when,
yeah,
you have teenagers.
Absolutely.
And so I decided that my son needed to hear whatever was going to be put. So I dragged him down there. Lori needed to stay home and fix dinner for everybody that was coming over for Easter.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah,
I bailed on her, and and Chris and I went down there. And I remember the talk. It was titled, "Are You Ready for a Breakthrough?" And I went into that service thinking that I'm here with Chris for his purposes.
Right.
And when I left, it was really about I was supposed to be there for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if that invitation had never happened, I wonder sometimes where I would be today. And so Carol is actually responsible for all this. It's your fault. You did it all. All right. And for that, I'm very grateful. It's and I wouldn't have met Ken Blanchard at New Venture. That's the church that she invited me to go to. I wouldn't have met Ken. Would not have been challenged in my faith. Would not have grown as much as I've grown as a leader. And so, yeah, we blame it all on you, Carol. Yep.
Well, I don't know if you know this or not, but I was in the crowd that day, and I was, as we're walking in, this is at the amphitheater in Oceanside, California, folks, so it's outdoor service, and there are maybe, 5,000 people come to this event. I was maybe 10 rows of people walking toward the amphitheater, 10 rows of people behind you and Chris.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that you had accepted the invitation.
Yep.
But we never talked. You know,
we never even met. Right.
You know,
exactly,
that morning, and had any kind of interaction. But I got to see that you had accepted the invitation to come to the service.
Yep.
So that was,
yep,
pretty cool for,
yep,
me.
It was.
You know, to see that.
So I'm going to come back to current day.
Yeah.
And you know, we get, yes, I'm a man of faith, and you're a person of faith, and there's people all around us who participate, but here's what we believe in servant leadership. We're here to help people. And all we require is that you have a heart to help people. I don't care what your religious beliefs are. I just care that you want to help people, that you have a heart for people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're taught in my religion to accept all people.
Right.
We're not to be the judge. And that's what we try and do. Now, I'm going to back up. That's not what we try and do. That's what we do. Because
yeah,
every life is valuable. And you know what? We can do great things together in this world. We can do more things together in this world together than we can apart.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can make a difference in our nation, communities, to get people to come together to help each other. Wow, could you imagine what this world would be like,
yeah,
if we had servant, yeah, leadership in Washington, servant leadership,
yeah,
in California,
yeah,
servant leadership wherever you might live. I would love to see that happen, to where people, it's okay to disagree with people without anger and emotion. And so we accept everyone. And there's no requirement for anyone to be religious in our company, because in our faith, we accept everyone. We work with everyone. And so that's something that people ask me about, and they go, well, how do you do this? I said, well, this is what I'm taught. We're to accept everyone. And so, and then the other question I get asked is, how do you do servant leadership in a military environment? Because we sell to military customers.
Yeah.
And the simple answer to that is we help people control disturbances in their country with good communications and not with bullets. And those are the folks who want to help, people who want to keep the peace, not destroy the peace. And so, anyway, what was that original question that you had? I've been talking for so long now.
Well, it was just that we were going to talk about the whole DOJ thing. But so we've gone ahead and we've created the Institute. And, you know, I'd like to hear about what really motivated you to start a Servant Leadership Institute.
Well, when we bought the company in late 2004, we were committed to running it differently, mm-hmm. and running it under servant-led principles.
Right.
But we didn't know much about it. And so I had started studying in 2004, but with the investigation, that was my number one priority. So we started learning about servant leadership, and we went to Greenleaf and started attending conferences. We started talking to people that were involved in that world. And we were a manufacturing company. Datron manufactures radios. Mm-hmm. And we were looking for someone who had helped manufacturing companies implement servant leadership. And we had a difficult time finding those companies. And after a year or so, we started the study. We studied together with the management team, but we came to the conclusion that we weren't going to find a training program out there that would help us implement servant leadership in our organization.
Yeah.
Not just teach it, but implement it.
Right.
And so we started on a path to self-fund, and we funded this. We developed our own curriculum to teach all of our employees about servant leadership. And we ended up with a 45-hour training program, three different modules, 15 hours apiece. But we trained everyone in the company under that curriculum. And what we found out was we were making some pretty good strides when everybody mm-hmm. in the company mm-hmm. understood servant leadership.
Yeah.
Everyone, not just the leaders, but everyone.
Right.
And we were getting some amazing results. And so after a couple of years of seeing those results, we said, you know, we have to share what we know. And that's when we decided to create the Servant Leadership Institute. And that was to share what we had experienced and know about implementing servant leadership. And so that's what we do. There's a lot of good organizations who teach servant leadership, and we applaud them. We focus on what are you going to do with that knowledge, and how are you going to implement it in day-to-day behaviors.
Right.
And how are you going to deal with the issues that you're going to come across with human behavior, and the issues you're going to come across with in organizations who have maybe a different belief in how you should be led. How are you going to deal with what I love to call the little foxes, the people
yeah.
who say they're on board, but they're not.
Yeah.
We have all kinds of things that we've learned through actually doing this. And so we started the Servant Leadership Institute to help people implement servant leadership. And that's what we're committed to do, is help with the implementation side.
Yeah. We were talking the other day amongst ourselves about just that Servant Leadership Institute and the idea of an institute just that, an institution, right? And usually an educational institution. But then I took a look at the word institute as a verb,
mm-hmm.
an action word.
Exactly.
To set something up, to implement something. And so it just, you know, I never really thought of it that way before. So not only is it, do you have the educational side, but you also have the action side. And that's why we're saying that we're an organization where education meets action.
Exactly. And you need both of those.
Yes.
You can't be successful in a leadership role without having both, taking what you've learned and then knowing how to apply it in your day-to-day behaviors. And so
right.
you have to have both. And The experiences you have as a leader will help you do that. And I have a lot of experiences in the power model. Carol can attest that every now and then, maybe sometimes more than often than I want, that power model comes out. And I have to put them back in the closet and shut the door and say, no, I'm not going to do that. And in some cases, I have to go back and apologize and make things right. But that's part of the process because no one's perfect. But you mentioned the action word, institute. Now go to the first word, servant. And when we decided to start the Servant Leadership Institute, we decided to stick with the name servant for a reason. We didn't like authentic. We didn't like some of the other things that were out there. Servant was the one word that also required action.
Yes.
It required you to do something for someone else.
Right.
And so we have the servant, active word in front, in servant, the active word in helping people teach and institute what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're all about, is helping folks take that and put it to action in their day-to-day lives, both in their organizations, and if we're invited in their personal lives, we'll help people in their personal lives as well. So,
I mean, from my experience, having experienced it and as well as observing it in other people, I believe it's, you know, you really get in and start doing servant leadership, there's no way it can't affect you on your personal side.
Right.
Because you really do start thinking in a different way.
I agree. And it takes a while. I mean, we didn't decide in 2004 to do this, and in 2005 we had great results. What we found out when we did an analysis on our first two modules of training, we stopped and did some surveys to see if we were hitting the mark with our employees. And what we learned in studying those results was it takes an average of 5 years to see any leadership training be effective mm-hmm. in an organization. And if you're going into a company to change a culture that's already there, it will take you about 7 years to change that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And what Cheryl Batchelder is doing over in Popeyes fits that model perfectly. It's been about seven years. She's been getting great results, but it took her 7 years to change that culture. And so it's something you have to be committed to. It isn't something that you start today and expect to be done in 6 months. This is a lifelong journey. This is a lifelong journey for me as a leader, and I'm committed to that journey.
Well, Art, thanks so much. And thanks to everyone for listening today. In future podcasts, we plan to share more conversations with Art as well as other practitioners of servant leadership. So are you intrigued by what you've heard? Find out more about the Servant Leadership Institute and the services we offer at www.servantleadershipinstitute.com. And we want to hear about your servant leadership experiences. So send us an email at info@servantleadershipinstitute.com.